Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Luther College, offering more than 60 areas of study, including the new data science and neuroscience majors. Dedicated to preparing students for success in a changing world.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Kyle Munson has been writing for the Des Moines Register for 24 years. For the last 8, he's been telling Iowa's stories as the Register's Iowa columnist. He's uncovered true gems. He's introduced us to fascinating characters. He's shown us at our best. And he's started some important conversations when we've been at our worst. Now he's moving on to a new job, not out of the state, but this hour, an exit interview with Kyle Munson. And you are welcome to join the conversation if you'd like to take a walk down memory lane or ask Kyle a question. You can give us a call at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And Kyle is with me now. Hello, Kyle.
Hello, Charity. Hey, this is weird, but it's wonderful to be talking to you.
Well, welcome back to the show. And let's start with going way back in time. Now, a lot of us remember you from your music columns in the Des Moines Register, but you were kind enough to share a column that you wrote before the music columns, where you started being the voice of Generation X for Central Iowa in the Des Moines Register. Tell me a little bit about that one.
Yeah, that, you know, it's kind of, it kind of shows why I've been at the Register for so long. They've given me a lot of rope to try different things. And that was including a young pup, Gen X, you know, aspiring journalist and reporter in the newsroom, started in a part-time news assistant role initially. And they wanted to, here's an abiding fascination in media. They're always wanting to find different ways to attract younger audiences, readers, and viewers.
Yes.
And so at that time, they were looking for a Gen X columnist, and I pitched this column. And that was my first time as a newspaper columnist. And I chose the horrible name called Down In It for this column. And I still look back on this and can't believe that I continued to have a career after publishing some of those initial, especially the first column. I've used the first introductory column as a dramatic reading for humorous effect in later years, and it goes over pretty well. So,
do you have a favorite line you want to share with us?
Well, let's see. So here's the first graph or two. Just where is down? And once there, what does it look like? You tell me. You show me. Central Iowa denizens, this is your wake-up call from the front desk, and I know there's been some juicy stuff kicking in every one of your rooms. Hello. As a 23-year-old writer, journalist with a passion for an eclectic mix of arts and entertainment, I will be your scribe for this flight. This column stands as a guide and forum for young souls in the area who enjoy rolling out and about to experience marvels beyond the nearest picture tube. So, you know, you get, I don't think I've used the word denizens in my writing since, because that was a nice lesson not to use it.
Well, it's priceless, and thank you for having a sense of humor. You don't hear me playing myself at 23 on the radio. But, you know, even reading that column, there is a thread that has gone through all of your work. And that is, in your final paragraph, you said, "And don't throw me some stale, defeatist, Death Moines stuff. Change channels, try cutting the city some slack, and maybe she'll love you back." I mean, Des Moines has been through a lot of changes since you started writing. And obviously, many people consider it to be the epitome of cool these days, not without problems. But with all of that change, I mean, you were a very optimistic young man and really in love with Iowa even then.
Yeah, I guess I can't deny that. And that's why I think the Iowa columnist job is such a great fit. I do have that eternal optimism for Iowa. And yeah, even long before this renaissance of Des Moines and downtown Des Moines, where we land on every other top 10 list that comes out, I was a big believer in what stitches this state together. I love that notion of the mix of progressive and practical that is Iowa, some of the political balance we've had through the years, the fabric of these small towns, how the 99-county infrastructure, the way it was initially laid out because of that agricultural need, also led to all these interesting small communities, You know, we're an overwhelmingly white state, and yet we've had immigration in different areas of Iowa and an outreach to the international world that is very Iowan. So yeah, all of that has really made me love it as a native and not a captive.
What made you want to go into journalism? When did you first start thinking about that?
You know, it was really this, it was simple. I wanted to write in my everyday working life. And I was an English student, went to a Central College in Pella, largely because they had a great international program. I was able to study Shakespeare in London. So it was that love of storytelling and writing that led me into journalism. And then once I got into a newsroom, I fell in love with the news business almost after the fact. I had been reading the newspaper growing up, and I even interviewed, you know, I thought I was going to be a cartoonist at one point. I published some bad cartoons, which thankfully you can't see on the radio. But yeah, so it was really that love of storytelling essentially that got me into the news business.
And I mentioned you worked as the music critic for the Des Moines Register for, what, about 10 years. And that was really a dream gig for you. What were you hoping to do in that role?
Yeah, you know, that was my first dream job. I grew up a hardcore music fan, and so I was able to marry these two loves of writing and storytelling and music in my first full-time job at the Register. So I became the music critic in 1997. I just, you know, I wanted to be the next, you know, Robert Christgau. I wanted to, you know, write for Rolling Stone, whatever. I was all in with music journalism, and it was a fun and exciting time. This was right as digital disruption was happening, not only in news media, but also music. As I was covering it, we had Napster come along, and then iTunes and everything else. So it was a great time. I was able to watch the rise of Iowa's Slipknot from a basement in Urbandale. And talk with a lot of top musicians who were touring through the heart of the country.
Well, and this is something that you don't see in a lot of newspapers anymore because, again, of how things have changed. But even at that time, I mean, was there a challenge to being the Iowa music critic that far outside of where so much of the music world was taking place?
So I would go, like, every year I would go to South by Southwest in Austin, Texas. So there were things where you could stay connected to the industry. And in a strange way, we would still get a number of major acts. I started before Wells Fargo Arena was built. We still had Veterans Auditorium in downtown Des Moines, but Hilton Coliseum had a regular lineup of shows. And in the 90s, there were still some major stadium concerts at Jack Trice and other places around the state. So we would get a surprising mix of artists here, even though we were not New York or L.A. And then we would have these weird things that would happen, like Bono of U2. He brought a bus tour across Iowa in this Heart of America tour. And it wasn't a music event. It was part of his humanitarian cause. He was campaigning for debt relief for Africa. And so I followed him and this bus tour where he would stop in diners and meet with average folks, and he would meet with officials and governors. So that was a fascinating, just one example of how, again, similar to the caucuses, Iowa sometimes punches above its weight just because we're seen as the epitome of, you know, rural America or the heart of America.
The stereotype works for us a little bit as far as attracting people who want to have that kind of platform.
That's right. They come all the way out here for that air of authenticity. Yeah.
So Bono obviously was a pretty big moment for you. Who else really stands out?
It's not always, you know, I was able to interview Paul McCartney in a telephone interview, and that was a highlight, and that was interesting. It was funny. He was en route to another concert when I did that, and he had to pause for a minute. He goes, "Oh, just a minute." And he had to lean his head out the window and wave to fans as they drove into the arena. Then he, you know, stuck his head back in the car and continued the interview.
Nice.
It was a perfect portrait of Paul as, you know, the crowd pleasing Beatle. But it's also, I remember weird things, like I was paid to attend hundreds and hundreds of concerts, and I still love going to concerts. I'm a huge music fan. And so I remember these scenes from different concert reviews. You haven't felt uncomfortable until you're, you know, a middle-aged man, and you're going to a teen pop show, And it's, you know, the arena is full of, you know, preteen or teen kids and their parents, and you're this lone male. You're walking into a seat in the middle of this crowd, and all those parents are staring at you.
What are you doing here? Stay away from my children.
So I'm like waving my notebook. Hey, it's okay. I'm working. I'm just so. You know. So I went through, you know, the waves of NSYNC and everything else. I once asked Justin Timberlake in an interview, you know, if he, on the eve of his first solo album, if he thought it was going to be as big as Michael Jackson's Thriller, and that made him laugh. You know, I reviewed the band Alabama at Hilton Coliseum in Ames, the country band Alabama. And this was at the height of the George W. Bush administration and the Iraq War. And Randy Owen, the lead singer, was on stage, and he went into this tirade between a couple songs where he talked about the media and the way it covered the war in Iraq was responsible for the deaths of American soldiers. And I was sitting there going, what? And then he went on and he said, this makes me want to kick their ass. And so I put in my review, and so that set me off a little bit. And I put in my review, well, Randy, if you want to blame the media for this and you want to, you know, you want to fight somebody, here's my address, you know, Kyle Munson, Des Moines Register, 715 Locust Street. You can come and use me as your scapegoat. I never did hear from Randy Owen, and I never did get into fisticuffs with him. But
that's good.
I did hear from some commenters. I ended up on a couple radio shows, and that was a conversation topic for the week.
Any regrets?
No, I don't regret. I always have and always will stand up for media and free speech and, you know, and the right to cover story. And, you know, covering stories thoughtfully and thoroughly does not cause trouble. It helps. So, yeah, I don't apologize for that in the least.
All right, we're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. I'm talking to Kyle Munson. For the last 24 years, he's written for the Des Moines Register. He was the music critic for a long time. And for the last 8 years, he's been telling Iowa's stories as the Register's Iowa columnist. He is moving on, not out of the state, just to a new job, but out of journalism. And we're doing an exit interview this hour. You are welcome to join the conversation. 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IP. Talk. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Luther College, offering more than 60 areas of study, including the new data science and neuroscience majors. Dedicated to preparing students for success in a changing world.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, I'm talking with Kyle Munson. He's been writing for the Des Moines Register for the last 24 years. He's been the Iowa columnist for the last 8 years, telling Iowa's stories. And we're doing an exit interview this hour as he prepares to move on. We'd love to hear from you as well. If you have a favorite story that Kyle has told over the years that you'd like to talk about, give us a call. 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And before we move on from talking about your time writing about music, you reminded me of one of the weirdest little episodes in Iowa history, at least recent Iowa history, when Flava Flav opened a chicken restaurant in Clinton. Tell me what you remember about covering that.
Oh, that is so strange. Yeah. So here is, you know, one of the MCs, vocalist from rap group Public Enemy, you know, staunch, militant, groundbreaking rap group from the 1980s, and, you know, still around. But he was always kind of the comic relief, and I guess that role played out here too. In Clinton, Iowa, he decides, I think he still is based in Vegas, but several years back, he thought he would start a chain of chicken restaurants, not only in Vegas, but he thought, well, he had some local partner investor in Clinton, Iowa, of all places, and thought, let's try it here, right across the street from a KFC. And you can't make this stuff up. Here he is, full on Flava Flav with the chains and
the
and
clock
everything.
And the,
yeah, yeah. The clock, the fur coat, and walking in, and it's like, And here is the typical Iowa chamber crew and the mayor and local officials already there to welcome him for the opening of the restaurant. And I don't know. And he's, you know, making his chicken, demonstrating how to make it without, you know, any sanitary gloves or anything, you know, all these gold rings on his fingers. And that was a surreal, that was one of many surreal days in small town or, you know, out in the, out around Iowa. So dead of winter. And yeah, Flavor Flav and his chicken, short-lived chicken
yeah,
restaurant,
didn't
I should
last,
say.
Strangely. Well, you know, I grew up reading Chuck Offenberger's columns when he was the Iowa columnist, when he was the Iowa boy. Did you read Chuck? I mean, had you thought about the Iowa columnist position when you were growing up? Did it make an impact on you?
Yeah, well, yeah, I definitely read Chuck growing up. You know, I always say I'm the fourth Iowa columnist since World War II. There was Gordon Gammack, who sort of pioneered the role, and he was even overseas with the troops in World War II for a time. And then Chuck came along and really defined the role for 20 years. And while this is the Iowa columnist, he was the Iowa boy. So it's hard to bottle lightning like that.
Yeah.
He became the Iowa boy, his own tagline. And then John Carlson had a great decade between Chuck and me.
Which I missed. I was pretty much out of the state for
right.
that one.
So I've loved Chuck and this entire lineage of people and the support I've drawn from them and other mentors. So yeah, I've read Chuck and that definitely spoke to me. But initially going into the Register, that wasn't foremost in mind. I was thinking the music, the marriage of music and writing made the most sense initially. And then, you know, as I got more and more into it, and I was traveling around Iowa even then to do stories and, of course, cover concerts and musicians and just soaking in that Iowa environment as a journalist became more and more important. And then I was able to use that later as the Iowa columnist.
Do you remember a point in your career? I mean, you mentioned when you were writing as a music critic, wanting to go on and write for Rolling Stone. Do you remember a point where your idea of what you wanted to be and where you wanted to be shifted?
That's interesting. You know, part of this is sort of, I guess, a fumbling around and just always being willing to explore. So after I spent a decade as the music critic, not only was the music industry shifting, of course, but also news media, as I mentioned, and I wanted to leap headlong into this digital transformation. That was a deliberate decision on my part, and seeing where things were going. And so I did that for several years. I became a digital editor on the Register's, you know, first expanding digital news desk. And so that was where my interest shifted in terms of, you know, I want to experiment with journalism and media in this way and not necessarily wed myself to just music journalism. And so that was a big shift in my life. And if I hadn't done that, I wouldn't have found my way to Iowa columnist either. So it turned me back into becoming more of a writer down the road.
Well, and I think about just so much of what you've written over the years resonates so strongly with me as an Iowan. And, you know, I came up in journalism and had plans to leave and to move on. And I did for a while. And then there's this life shift where I realized that this is where I wanted to be. This is where I wanted to raise my kids. So in addition to journalism, I mean, was there a personal shift?
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. You know, I as I became music critic, I, you know, got married in 1997 too.
Like, wait
not
a
quite
minute.
That old, yeah. 1997. Yeah, my wife is an architect, and we have a son who's in high school now. So all those things are considerations. But Iowa is always fascinating to me, and always will be. But it's true that the world is shrinking in media and just in life as we know it too. You can do so many more things as a journalist anywhere than you could 10, 20, 30 years ago in some ways. So, yeah, you're right. I'm more and more invested in Iowa, and I see more possibilities for what I can do with Iowa as a home base as I go on in my career, I guess.
When you became the Iowa columnist, I mean, you had a voice writing as the music critic. You had an opportunity to really express yourself and be Kyle in a way as a music critic. But did you think about what you wanted your voice to be as the Iowa columnist? Because again, this is a place where you do get to express your personality.
Yeah, I did. And I think as a writer, you never stop developing that. So I look back on some of those first columns I did as the Iowa columnist, let alone what I read earlier this hour as a young Gen Xer. And I see a big difference from then to now. And that will always be true. So I think there's some of that optimism you were talking about, but also I do want to build consensus. In some ways, growing up in journalism has made me, in some ways I'm probably fooling myself, but I like to think of myself as truly independent in terms of outlook, politics, whatever. And so I think I'm that way for life in many ways in wanting to do that. And so that has played out in my journalism too. Not trying to be, it takes me a long time, I think, to come to an issue and then be truly strident on it, because I want to spend some time really kind of considering it from all sides. And so those issues where I have, been more active, that develops over the course of years. And then I, take a pretty hard stand and just keep mining that.
In your early work as the Iowa columnist, I mean, you've done some really remarkable stories over the years and really dug deep in some really creative ways. Do you remember one of the first stories that you did as the Iowa columnist where you started to realize the potential of this position for you?
Well, that's a good question. This might not be the exact example, but I'm always surprised, and I love the part of journalism where we have this license to explore so many different walks of life and to step into the middle of people's lives when they are, they can be in the middle of some pretty heavy stuff, both, some emotional high points and also at their low points. There was a case of bullying up in Northwest Iowa several years ago, early-ish on in my tenure as Iowa columnist, and this high schooler had committed suicide after rampant bullying. And I remember right in the wake of that happening, knocking on the family's door, and I ended up talking to his young sister, and not knowing how this was going to go, not knowing how it was going to be received, and then sitting down with her and having this really thoughtful, in-depth interview. And she was just so eloquent, so powerful, so thoughtful, and even as she was dealing with this. And so something like that, I think about something like that because so often I think the media is seen as intrusive, mm-hmm. but I feel like I've had so many experiences throughout my career so far where, yeah, we do approach people at vulnerable moments, but a lot of times we end up being a catharsis for them because we're there as kind of this, ideally as this neutral party or this party that just wants to bring some meaning and some understanding to what they're going through and to share it with people. And we ask them questions that their support network, their relatives or their friends are not going to stop and think to ask them or not need to ask them. And so we bring different things out of them at that time that ends, I've seen it over and over, that ends up actually helping them, I think, in a way. Not every time. I'm not going to claim that every time when we step in that we do good work. But I think the vast majority of the time I've seen how journalism can help people in those moments.
Well, you've gone to more than your share of funerals over the years. I mean, you just covered that heartbreaking funeral in Creston, Iowa over the weekend for the family that died on their Mexican spring break vacation. And that article, I just read it, is you wrote it with so much love and so much compassion. When you walk into a situation like that, do you have an idea of the story that you want to tell or a way to approach a situation like that, which it must be hard to walk in?
Yeah, no, that is a good question. So so this funeral for the family killed in Mexico from Creston, they were holding this in a, in the large gymnasium in town because they had over 1,000 mourners that packed the place. So I go into that already having written some about the family and having approached them in the immediate wake of the tragedy. I went in wanting to do justice to these, you know, four people, the two parents and the two kids that had died, and wondering how I was going to do that, depending on what played out at the funeral. So that was that was answered pretty early on in the service when the brother of Kevin Sharp, who died, walks up to the podium wearing a Iowa Hawkeyes T-shirt with a tiger hawk on his chest, and he steps up to the lectern. And I thought, you know, I've been to my share of funerals, both not just as a journalist but just as a person, and I was expecting, you know, a little bit of humor, a little bit of tears, and who knows what. But it starts out, all of a sudden, AC/DC's Thunderstruck is blaring through the gymnasium. He raises his fists. And so right there, that, you know, that moment was my signal of how this was going to go for me as a journalist to cover this. Because then I had, and then his eulogy ended up being amazing. And the whole program overall ended up, you know, giving forth details of this family that was touching and very detailed, and it just did the
really it, helped you know them.
Yeah, it really helped me know them. So, but there was such a dramatic gesture in the middle of it that was kind of an anchor for me as a journalist on how I was able to put this all together right after the funeral.
I'm talking with Kyle Munson. He has been the Iowa columnist for the Des Moines Register for the last 8 years, and he's moving on to a new job. So this hour, we're taking a look back, and you are welcome to join the conversation. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at IPR Talk or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. We have an email from Rick Burns, and he said, after returning from deployments to Iraq and Afghanistan, I founded a small nonprofit struggling to raise money for goat projects in Afghanistan. A Veterans Day article brought funding for two village projects. He says he's very grateful for your reach and your skills. And Kyle, that makes me wonder, I mean, was there a moment when you realized the kind of power you had as a storyteller? Because when you pick up a story like Rick's and share it with people, you really have the power to make a difference.
Yeah, no, and that's, yeah, and you know it as well, too. That is the power of journalism, where you can bring meaning to people's lives, and then these stories can just resonate far beyond Iowa. I think about last year, there was the story of the construction worker, also from the Creston area, actually, who ended up in a Pulitzer-winning photo. He was in the middle of that dramatic river rescue and was able to save a woman from the water. And then he ended up dying after kind of a troubled and somewhat tragic life. And I wrote about him last year. And the way that story traveled and reached people was just amazing. But also I heard from his family and his mother and the way it brought comfort to them. That's one example. Earlier this year, I wrote about Ragbri co-founder Donald Call, and you know, this isn't due to me, obviously, because Ragbri is its own entity that has spread far and wide. But Donald, in his own journalism career, also reached many, many people. He was a longtime columnist for the Register and based out of Washington and syndicated. And I every week, I'm still hearing from people about that and about how, you know, what he meant to their lives and just. And so you're right. It's on a regular basis in a job like this or a job like yours where you realize kind of the power and the reach of, you know, good stories and relevant news and the way they can kind of stitch people together, not just in your own backyard, but across the world.
Doug has a question for you. He says he wants me to ask you if you covered Groucho Marx's last public appearance.
I missed that one. No, sorry, I did not. But, you know, I still will be riding Ragbri this year with Team Groucho. So that's somewhat, I don't know if that's, you know.
I knew there must be a trick in there somewhere.
I don't know, yeah.
So you're going on Ragbri even though you're not covering Ragbri?
Yeah, I had to register this year for the first time, but I was happy to do so. I'm not going to stop bicycling, or you know, I love to bicycle. I love Ragbri and the Ragbri family. So,
will this be your first opportunity to go on Ragbri without covering it?
Yes. So it's my first civilian rag brine, and I don't know what it's going to be like.
You're going to have a lot of time on your hands.
I know. I will. I'm going to see a lot of the scenery. I won't be rushing to deadline. It's going to be a brand new world.
A lot more stops. Are there vendors you've been waiting to stop at, but you just never had time?
That's right. Yeah, I never have to pass up the Amish pie stand. So.
All right. We are going to take another short break. We'll be back in just a few minutes. I'm talking with Kyle Munson. He has been writing for the Des Moines Register for the last 24 years. For the last 8 years, he's been telling Iowa's stories as the Register's Iowa columnist. He's moving on, not out of the state, but to a new job. And this hour, we're taking a look back. You're welcome to join the conversation as well. If there are stories of Kyle's that have touched you over the years or questions you'd like to ask him, you can give us a call. 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, Kyle Munson is with me. He's been writing for the Des Moines Register for the past 24 years. He's been the Iowa columnist for the last 8 years, telling Iowa's stories. And this hour, we're doing an exit interview as he moves on to a new job. You can give us a call if you want to join the conversation, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And we are going to go to the phones. Mike is on the line in Iowa City. Hi, Mike.
Hi, Charity. Hi, Kyle. Mike Carberry from Iowa City here, and I just want to thank you for all your years of writing. What a delight it's been for me to read.
Oh, thanks, Mike.
And,
I appreciate that.
Yeah. I started reading your music columns when I was a music columnist and had a local Iowa radio show here in Iowa City. And I always thought you had exceptionally good taste in music. And that is, I think, one of the key ways to be a good writer is to have good things to write about. And you always promoted local and Iowa stuff that was up and coming to help promote the Iowa music scene, and I always appreciated that. And the thing I always looked forward to was your year-end lists. I always thought that they were a must-read and a must-buy.
Oh, well, thanks very much. I appreciate that. You know, one thing throughout my career that's been true is, whether as a music critic or as an Iowa columnist touching on hot-button issues, you know, you hear all sorts of feedback, and so I always appreciate the compliments. But I also took a strange delight when I would, get those anonymous phone mail messages at 2 a.m, and I would hear them the next day, and it was just somebody just tearing into me. So you get used to that as a journalist very quickly, too.
You said you took a strange delight. Did it take you a while to come to that feeling, or was it a little scary at first?
Well, yeah. I mean, I think you gradually develop, the Teflon journalism skin, or your emotions are kind of vulcanized to the criticism. You know, the worst thing as a journalist is if you get something wrong. So if somebody tears into you and it's because you have made a mistake, or you realize that you just bungled it, then you feel horrible. Now, but if somebody comes at you and
I have to say, you've always done a really great job owning that when it has happened, which I think is really impressive. But
yeah,
thanks.
Yeah, no, thanks. I appreciate that. And actually, I got a huge response one time as a music critic when I wrote something about, like a year or two later, about completely changing my mind on an album or something like that. And people were, oh my God, thanks so much for saying that you're human. But to get it wrong, you feel horrible. But if you feel like that you at least have your facts straight and you can stand on your analysis, and people then come at you with harsh criticism, that's fine. That as a journalist, eventually that feels that to stir a reaction is what your job is to do. You're supposed to provide thought-provoking stuff for people to read, to watch, whatever. And as long as you do that job, then the criticism is okay.
Now, as the Iowa columnist, I mean, you've written about such an incredible variety of things. How have you decided what to write about over the years?
Oh, yeah, that's tough. I mean, sometimes you have a great idea and the timing is not right. I guess I'm always, sometimes I'll get on a theme and there'll be an issue that pops up for a while, or a given set of, characters in a news issue like this family from Creston we were talking about that you'll spend some time with. I'm always looking for just something different or a twist as well, and ways to kind of help push Iowa forward. So there's no big calculus. One of the great things about this job is that the net, you cast a wide net, and there's really no limit ultimately. You can range across just about anything. So, I have written columns that have featured the Oscar Mayer Wienermobile to, some of the most thorny racial topics that we deal with as a country today. That variety is invigorating.
Well, I've stolen a lot of ideas from you over the years.
Likewise.
But I'm curious. I mean, some of your ideas, I think, man, how did he ever find that? Do you have secrets now that you're leaving? Can you share with those of us who are continuing to tell Iowa stories?
Yeah, actually, there's a guy named Ed who lives down in Gravity, Iowa, and he calls me every Monday.
Call me Ed.
Yeah, okay. No, that's the great thing. I mean, sometimes it can be as simple as an email from somebody, and I'll notice something on Twitter or Facebook, in a Facebook group. I used to, more often years ago, paging through small town newspapers, and you'd see a little news item that was a paragraph or two, and that would make me go, hmm. And I would dig and dig, and that would lead to something. I think it's just a continuous sifting, and curiosity is what gets to those ideas. And then always kind of looking for that different twist to put on them. So there's no secret. It's just the continual search.
Shoot, just hard
work. I know, sorry. Yeah.
If there's something you're holding back, just send me an email later,
okay.
All right?
All right. So, deal.
Now, you have covered the Iowa State Fair as thoroughly as any journalist has ever covered the Iowa State Fair. Now, you say in the newspaper that you love the Iowa State Fair. First of all, this year, not covering the fair, will you attend?
Yeah, I don't know. Yes, I will attend. I will confirm that I will attend the State Fair. Maybe not
every
for
day.
As many hours, yeah, as I would normally would.
Well, you're going to have a job. You probably can't.
That's right. That's right. So, yeah, I mean, if protesters, paint the butter cow again or something, I won't be there to cover it immediately, but I will come defend it as soon as I can.
Do you have a State Fair highlight, something that really stands out?
Oh, wow. There should be so many. Was it last year, a year or two ago, I participated in the Llama Limbo contest. So that was a new experience for me. But, where else but being an Iowa journalist does something like tossing a cow chip become an institutional piece of your job, right?
And something you've gotten quite good at.
Right. Right. I finally was able to triumph once after years and years and years, but I spent years failing. So that's just one example of how the State Fair and this job is, I guess, a unique little piece of Americana.
Well, let's look back at some of the things that you've attempted to do over the years. I really enjoyed your Unite Iowa series, where you took some of the really contentious issues and tried to start conversations between people who had differing viewpoints. And as you mentioned, it takes a while for you to become strident about an issue because you want to listen to all sides. And I felt like with that series, you were trying to encourage the rest of us to adopt that approach, to really listen to each other. Do you think it worked, your Unite Iowa series?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it worked in the context of we need to have these difficult conversations over and over and over. So we had this, I worked in partner with a professor at Drake University who approached me after I had some other events that addressed immigration. And I think that worked because I still hear the results of that or people talking about that. And it opened up you know, other forums followed in its wake. So I believe that we, as not just a state but as a nation, have to continue to be incredibly progressive on these racial issues. It's not as if there's ever a line in the sand like the civil rights era or the Obama presidency that represents a quote-unquote solution or a, you know, a finish line. And I really cherish that experience. And that is an example of where you can, I've leveraged this columnist job into a lot of different directions. And spending months and months and months to produce a forum that, you know, attracted hundreds of people, and we staged it at different locations all around the capital city. It had a lot of buy-in from, you know, different partners, people in our crowds from local neighborhoods to a former governor to whatever. Yeah, I'm proud of that. And in working not just with the Drake professor, but those students, was an amazing experience. And that is just an example of where you can take a newspaper column and leverage it for real face-to-face in-person change too.
One of my favorite things that you've done over the years are just the personal profiles where you've introduced us to individuals in Iowa. Are there individuals that really stand out for you that you've gotten the opportunity to write about?
Oh man, yeah, there are so many. You know, I think about, there's a man named Bill Dudding up in Bancroft, Iowa. He was a local newspaper columnist up there and a baseball fan, and I would still get letters from him occasionally. I think of somebody you probably know, Evelyn Berkby down in
Southwest
Iowa.
One of my favorites, absolutely.
Yeah.
One of the former homemakers of the year.
That's right. So, you know, you step into the middle of a life like hers, and she just has her unending humor and insight and humanity. And so people like that in every corner of the state have inspired me along the way.
I know you're moving on, and we won't talk too deeply about why, but why now? I mean, why is this a time to leave?
Oh, yeah. No, I don't mind talking about it at all. I mean, I think, so I remain a huge fan of journalism and the news biz. And like I say, I am, my DNA is journalism for life now. I'm permanently warped in that way. So even though we have, I think, some things to sort out with the news economy across the board and ways to support good news and large newsrooms, I think there's a recognition among just in the world in general that journalism skills are more crucial than ever. I mean, we need people to be able to analyze events with really acute news judgment, and people need to have really savvy storytelling skills to cut through the noise. And so now all firms are recognizing this. So I saw a chance to go help a firm, you know, Principal Financial, help create this new content studio with some people I know well, and to do some interesting media experiments and use my journalism skills in a completely different way. So, I mean, just for a variety of factors, it was the right time to try this. And I think if anything, we're entering an era where more people, including newsrooms, are doing more experiments. And we're going to come out of this eventually with some answers for, you know, what news delivery looks like as we get deeper into the 21st century.
When I saw that your announcement that you were leaving, we've lost so many great journalists from all the newspapers in Iowa in recent years just through downsizing. I was really worried about not just you, but about this position. Do you know what the future is for the Iowa columnist position? Because I think it's such a valuable part of what the Des Moines Register does.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that. Yeah, they are going to hire a new Iowa columnist. So that was stated by our editor. So that will continue, and I'm so glad to have the legacy continue, because I do it has been a big part of my life. So I'm the fourth Iowa columnist since World War II. So now that we'll have a fifth is very important to me, and I'll be excited to see whomever that is where they can leverage it, because this is one of those rare jobs that you can leverage in so many different ways. And I have had a blast doing that. So yeah, the legacy will continue.
We have a comment here from one of our talk show producers, Lindsay Moon. She says, Kyle is one of the Iowa journalists who made me want to be a news producer. I've been reading his column since I was in college. He recently profiled an organization I founded, and being a subject of one of his stories gave me even more respect for his process and voice as a writer. Good luck with your next chapter, but Iowa is losing a great voice for good with you moving on. And I think so many journalists in Iowa can echo what Lindsay's feeling as well. You've been an inspiration to so many of us, and we are all going to miss your voice. As an Iowan, Kyle, I think you've made a lot of us better Iowans by telling us more about our state. So give us a little bit of Iowa advice. Where do Iowans need to go to really understand their state, do you think? Where should we travel to, whether it's on bicycle or by car? Where should we go?
Oh, my gosh. Wow, that's a big question. So, I love to bike the High Trestle Trail. That's kind of my home, my hometown trail. And you have to visit a place like Fairfield, where you have this town that has been transformed by a complete different Maharishi transcendental meditation sensibility for decades. That creates an interesting oasis on the prairie. You can go up to a place like Storm Lake, where you've had a town that has been sustained and then grown thanks to waves of Hispanic immigrants through the years, and you've got Pulitzer winner Art Cullen sitting up there in his newsroom in Storm Lake. There's so many. I love going up to Dubuque, to the bluffs up there and the Mississippi River in Dubuque, and up and down the Mississippi Valley, actually. Just some beautiful parts of Iowa there. There's the Redwood Steakhouse in Anita. That's kind of a family meeting spot for generations of my mother's family. They have an incredible relish tray that you won't believe. I don't know. It's sort of endless. I've spent time in Waterloo. We talk about some of these issues. Quentin Hart, the first African American mayor of Waterloo, and I think about how I was born in Cedar Falls, but I've spent a lot of my time as a journalist covering different, everything from tragedies to successes in that city of Waterloo, and places like that are near and dear to my heart as well. I love Iowa City. Both Iowa City and Ames, but Iowa City has been this college town magnet for me for years, and I have a good friend now who's a restaurateur there, and I don't know. I look around the state now, and the map is very full. So,
when we're going to go out here with some David Bowie, and David Bowie has been an inspiration for you as a journalist, which is not something I've heard anyone say before. Why?
I wrote about this just a little bit in the wake of Bowie's death. Yeah, I'm a lifelong Bowie fan, and obviously as a music critic. But he was never afraid to change, right? He was never afraid to enter a new phase
that's
of his career.
That's not David Bowie. That's Buddy Holly.
That's Buddy. Well, I spent a lot of time on Buddy Holly in my life too.
Right.
But both were pioneers.
Absolutely.
Both were pioneers.
Absolutely. Well, Kyle Munson, I'm looking forward to some more good work. I'm glad you're not leaving the state, but thank you so much for all that you've done for
Likewise.
Iowa.
Thanks, Charity. Thank you so much.
Kyle Munson has been the Iowa columnist for the Des Moines Register for the last 8 years. He is moving on, not leaving the state of Iowa, but moving on. And this hour, we've been taking a look back at some of the work he's done. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe.